Shantih. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
That force which drives the philanthropist, the householder, and the nationalist is called rasa, or a kind of mellow relationship, whose taste is very sweet. Right, so rasa means relationship here. Is this where we were, or were we farther along? Oh, okay. Sorry. Bhakti rasa is a mellow different from the ordinary rasa enjoyed by mundane workers. Mundane workers labor very hard day and night in order to relish a certain kind of rasa, which is understood as sense gratification. The relish or taste of the mundane rasa does not long endure, and therefore mundane workers are always apt to change their position of enjoyment. A businessman is not satisfied by working the whole week. Therefore, wanting a change for the weekend, he goes to a place where he tries to forget his business activities. Then, after the weekend is spent in forgetfulness, he again changes his position and resumes his actual business activities. Material engagement means accepting a particular status from some time and then changing it. This position of changing back and forth is technically known as bhoga tyag, which means a position of alternating sense enjoyment and renunciation. A living entity cannot steadily remain either in sense enjoyment or in renunciation. Change is going on perpetually, and we cannot be happy in either state because of our eternal constitutional position. Sense gratification does not endure for long, and is therefore called chapala sukha, or flickering happiness. For example, an ordinary family man who works very hard day and night and is successful in giving comforts to the members of his family thereby relishes a kind of mellow. But his whole advancement of material happiness immediately terminates along with his body as soon as his life is over. Death is therefore taken as a representative of God for the atheistic class of men. The devotee realizes the presence of God by devotional service, whereas the atheist realizes the presence of God in the shape of death. At death, everything is finished, and one has to begin a new chapter of life in a new situation, perhaps higher or lower than the last one. In any field of activity, political, social, national, or international, the results of our activities will be finished with the end of life. That is sure. So here people are doing something because of taste, the relationship. The relationship is there, that's what gives taste. Taste, there's no such thing as taste without relationship, right? Unless there's a relationship, there is no experience, right? So, of course, it may be relationship with seemingly dead matter, but in any case, there's relationship. So that's the only place where rasa is tasted. Now, the problem is that it's temporary. The happiness you get from any particular rasa is always temporary, right? It doesn't last long. Therefore, we see that the materials will be constantly changing what is their idea of sense gratification, with the idea that they'll always be happy. But it never happens, right? Because you're dealing with material energy. You know, it's like, you know, you have a dog, and you have an idea somehow or another it'll turn into a horse. So it doesn't. So you get another dog, and it doesn't turn into a horse. You get another dog. You just keep getting dogs, but they never turn into horses. Right? You understand? So the idea sounds great, is that I'm happy now. When that happiness is there, I feel it goes on forever. Right, so I would like that to last forever. But the problem is that they're dealing with the mundane. How can it last forever? Everything here is temporary. It just can't. So by definition, so what they're hoping for is something that doesn't exist. Right? So the only thing that does exist actually is one's relationship with the Lord. Everything else is illusion. Therefore, is whatever taste you are getting in relationships is actually coming from the Lord. That's why it has that eternal feeling, right? But we think it's the relationship with the object, when it's not. It's the connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? You know, when you're very nicely connected in happiness or distress, both of them seem like it's going to be there forever. That's because you're coming in contact with the eternal, because it's His potencies and His energies interacting. Does that make sense? So, therefore, is the mundane can never last. That's the thing, is we think that will last. It can never last. It can never last. So because of that, then, the people are looking in the wrong place. So the devotee then finds the Lord through devotional service. Right? In performing their service, they're either working for the Lord, you know, directly, the deity, like this, to sing, or through the process, you know, that's been mentioned, these different processes, the metaphysical processes of Shankhya and Buddhi Yoga, that one is able to perceive the Lord in those items of the material world that one considers of value. Right? What is important to you in this world, it's actually Krishna that's important. It's not the object itself, like that. Does that make sense? So they may from that and from there go to see Krishna, because the problem is even you're dealing with Krishna, you know, in His manifestations of things of this world. The problem is still those things are manifest temporarily. Relationship of the Lord with His energies is eternal, but its manifestation is temporary. So even there, how much taste can the living entity get, even if he sees his daily activities in connection with the Lord? You know, does that make sense? The mechanics of his activities. Does that make sense? So that's why then the devotee then comes to the platform of seeing Krishna as a person and interacting with Him as a person, because that platform is eternal. That one doesn't change. Does that make sense? Then another aspect that's given here is just the energy itself, why it's always going to be a problem, is because of the nature that energy works on this principle of bhoga tyag. Right? It can never stay in one position for long. So it's not just the material world, it's just the way energy is. It's the nature of the living entity, it's the nature of the Lord's energy. It's whatever is going on, then it will go to the to appreciate it further, you have to go to the opposite, right? It's like there. You're at work, so therefore then you appreciate the weekend. After the weekend, you appreciate going back to work. Does that make sense? So each one nourishes the other. Like that. And so then one can go develop each one of them more. So the idea is that whatever one's doing, there will always need to be a change to something different from that. So if you're happy, if you're always happy, then that always happy will turn into just normal. Right? So therefore, if there's distress, then you can appreciate the happiness. Does that make sense? So in both of them, so we're saying is that why it creates that experience, what is appreciated there or not, is that we're coming in contact with the Lord. That's the eternal platform. But the problem is because it's not in connection with the Lord, therefore, then that happiness doesn't bring about spiritual understanding, and that distress doesn't either. So there's no satisfaction actually in either way. But on the spiritual platform, then this natural changing or flickering of the spiritual nature, because both of them are in contact with the Lord, whether one's with the Lord or one's not with the Lord, the one is still happy. One is still satisfied. Does that make sense? Though they are different experiences, but each one nourishes the other. When you're with Krishna, therefore, when he's not there, the separation feels worse. Because the separation is worse than when you're with Krishna, then it's so much nicer. So it's constantly, each one increases. Does that make sense? Yeah. Doesn't make sense. Makes sense. Okay. Does that make sense? So this is that
oscillating effect of the energy. It's just the way it is. Does that make sense? You know, it's like he's with Mother Yashoda, then he's got to go out in the cowherd pasture, then he's got to come back to Mother Yashoda. You know, and then go out the next day. So it's always back. He's in the house, he's out in the field. He's in the house, he's out in the field. You know what I'm saying? So that aspect, is always something going on. There's day, then there's night. There's summer, then there's winter. There's the dry season, there's the wet season. Does that make sense? So always is like that. If it's always cold, then it's not. But if it's always cold, then you're looking forward to the heat. Then when the heat is there, you're looking forward to the cold. Right? Like not now, it's kind of balanced, so you don't think either way, but as it gets a little bit more cold, and you go, wow, when the summer comes, it'll be so nice. As soon as summer comes, you go, you know, when winter comes, that'll be nice. You know, so it's, you understand? It's just how rasa is increased, how it's appreciated. Because this relationship means this too. So there's always going to be that, you know, someone will be prominent, then the other prominent, back and forth. Does that make sense? It's just how it works. Yes? No? Okay. So the main point is that therefore for those who do not see Krishna in what they're doing, then Krishna, at least they'll see Krishna in death. Because then he'll come there. So whatever it is that they're doing, they think they're the controller, they have all their plans, they don't care for anybody. But at the time of death, then suddenly things don't exactly go according to your plan. You know, it wasn't what you really thought it would be. Yes? No? Like that. So no matter what it is, political, social, national, international, everything will be finished. That's the difficulty. Everything gets finished. So we unfortunately think that everything will last forever, but it doesn't. There's nothing in history that ever has proven it to be. Right? But everybody thinks, no, I'll make it different. No, but it's never happened. Make something happen that has happened. You know what I'm saying? Somebody's won a battle, someone's lost a battle, someone's gained a position, lost a position, but no one's ever lived forever. No one's ever been constantly happy. But still, everybody goes on with the hope, maybe. Right? And then they'll say, we're idiots because we're just working on faith. Right? Like that. You know, not being logical, not being scientific. Scientific is, name one person in history who was always happy, who didn't die, who's still around now. Right? So that's the whole point. So then if we're talking sentiment, now here's some real sentiment. You know, because at least the concept of God, at least it's an option. Right? There does appear to be superior forces at work here, laws of nature, things beyond that we can't explain that are the higher powers. So that it is a possibility. Maybe you want to turn a blind eye, but it's a possibility. But people living forever, it's never happened. There's no example. So therefore, where is the option? Right? That makes sense?
Bhakti Ras, however, the mellow relished in the transcendental loving service of the Lord does not finish with the end of life. It continues perpetually and is therefore called Amrita, that which does not die but exists eternally. Do we catch the thing? Bhakti Ras, however, blah, 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 is therefore called Amrita. Bhakti Ras Amrita. Right? So the whole name of the book is coming in this one point. This is confirmed in all Vedic literatures. Bhagavad Gita says that a little advancement in bhakti rasa can save the devotee from the greatest danger, that of missing the opportunity for human life. The rasas derived from our feelings in social life, in family life, or in greater family life of altruism, philanthropy, nationalism, socialism, communism, etc., do not guarantee that one's next life will be as a human being. Because the activity itself, being connected to the mundane, means that the mundane will be the result. You know what I'm saying? You cook with potatoes, you get a potato subject. You cook with cauliflowers, you get a cauliflower subject. Right? You don't have to worry that, you know, you put your things in the pot,
you know, stir it around, you know, put the lid on, you know, yawn a little bit like that, scratch your nose, open the pot to stir it, and now the cauliflowers have turned into eggplants. You go, oh, eggplants, cool. You know, then you stir that, and then put the lid back on, sit a little bit, another few minutes, you know, like that. You open it up like that, open it again, it's turned into spinach. Wow, great, okay. Stir it again. You know, like this, it goes on till it's cooked, and then you find out that actually it came out to be a, how you say, a steamed kumquats in Corella juice. You know, then it was like, hmm. You know, like, so it's like, it's what it is you deal with is exactly what you get. So you deal with the mundane, then you're going to find that the result is going to be mundane. And because of that, there's no guarantee that it's going to bring about human life, right? So the only reason for human life is to follow, is to become God conscious. And the person who is absorbed in God consciousness, then his social and family life, economics, everything is based around the Vedic principles. So that's the idea. Those are there to elevate you to Krishna, used by those who are elevating themselves in God consciousness. So then if you are performing those activities, even not in God consciousness, if you do it very perfectly, there's a good chance you may take human birth because you're at least following the human lifestyle, though you don't have the human consciousness, really. Right? It means you accept the authority, you accept this and that, but you don't actually want to know who you are. You don't actually get to the platform of the soul. Right? So therefore, it's a problem. But at least you follow human lifestyle, you'll get that again. But that's only if it's really well done. Anything you made a mistake on, those points, you are going to have to take some other variety of birth. You know, so it'll be mixed. You're mainly pious, you do a few bad things. So those bad things, you will get that, you will get some punishment for that. Doesn't mean that you won't get human life for all the good things you've done. Right? But it's not guaranteed. And then if you're not following a Vedic lifestyle, to get human birth basically is an impossibility. Like that. It's an impossibility. That's the problem. You know, people are in the illusion that the humans are always humans. No, that's just one of the stops, you know, on their journey. So devotional service, because of its nature, because it's eternal, and because that is actually the goal of human life, therefore, someone who performs devotional service, that will guarantee human birth. That's the only thing that can guarantee. Nothing else can. Right? Materialistic activities cannot guarantee, even if they're pious. Right? Nahusha did so much pious activity, he ended up as a very extremely large snake. I mean, really big snake. Yes? Does it have to be conscious devotional service? I guess conscious enough that you're involved, but not necessarily that you know it's devotional service. You know, it's just like, I think those ducks in Regent Park, they had to be at least conscious that there was prasad in front of them and go to the effort to eat it. And so having done that, then next life is human. So you'd have to be conscious enough to be involved in the Agyata Sukriti. You know what I'm saying, mechanically. But you don't necessarily have to know what it is. That's what makes it a Agyata Sukriti. You know what it is and you voluntarily take part. That's devotional service. Right? But a Agyata Sukriti, that itself will give you human life. You know, it's just like Nama Bash will give you liberation. So that, you know, yeah, does that make sense? So the holy name will give you prema. Agyata Sukriti, that will put you again in contact with devotees and devotional service. Like that. Then in that association, then you can take up seriously and develop your love for Krishna. So the point is the lower levels of any of the devotional activities give so much more of a greater benefit than your best material activities. You know, your best pious activities, you know, you can get away, you can become Indra. If you're really pious, you can become Brahma or Prajapatis. But nothing that they do will give them liberation. Right? But here, chanting the holy name and Nama Bas, you get liberated. And, you know, so people work very hard for that on the material. You know, saying it's like trying to... Does that make sense? You know, it's like trying to, buy one of these, you know, huge multi-million dollar homes or something with lira or something, you know. Probably have to take you trillions of lira to buy it or something. You know what I'm saying? The work is so much more. Does that make sense? So the devotional service is so powerful that one simply has to focus on the devotion. Focus on the quality of devotion. So if, and then because you're trying to, devotion means that the result that you're doing for Krishna, you're trying to please Krishna. So that means if the result is for Krishna, that means the result is dependent upon the activity. Right? So therefore then there would be the devotion in trying to perform an activity that is also very nice for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Because the better the activity, the better the result. Does that make sense? And therefore, to get the activity very well, you have to understand the field of activities nicely. Therefore, then, you know, your position as servant of Krishna, how everything in the field can be engaged in Krishna's service. Right? So it naturally comes as part of the process. So in focusing on devotional service means these things are there. Because we're so used to basically the sentimental concept of religion, because otherwise there is no science in world religion. Where's the science? Right? Be good, be nice, turn the other cheek. A couple little things. But what's the science? How does one do that? How does one go about? And basically just have faith, which is good, nice. But there should be science to back up the faith. Right? Because in dealing with faith, you have to use intelligence, everything else like this. So the point is in devotional service, then the empty you focus on devotional service means the knowledge of devotional service, the process of devotional service has to be included. Right? So we're so used to it's just faith with no science. But devotional service means the science is part of the process. That makes sense? So therefore, we have to so that by focusing on it, then things will happen. Others say, "Oh, we're just doing that, but how are we going to run the temple or this that?" But who are you running the temple for? If you say just focus on devotional service, you don't need to do anything else. But it says, "No, but we have to be practical, Prabhu. We have to pay the bills." So, what is your process of paying bills? What is it? So that means there's devotional service, then you're paying the bills, and it has nothing to do with devotional service? No, so therefore you're paying the bills for who? For Krishna. So therefore, to pay the bills, you have to get your money. How are you going to get your money? You have to do an activity. So how expertly you do your activity, that's going to get you your money for Krishna. So then how is devotional service not going to make you expert in your day-to-day activities? Point is that if we don't see them in connection with Krishna, that's why the science is important. Otherwise, we think, if we're sitting in the temple, chanting our japa, involved in the kirtan, taking darshan, the deity, hearing Bhagavatam, like that, taking prasad or something, then that is, spiritual. Then once we walk out of the temple, now we're living our, our alternate ego here, our alternate lifestyle. And so then I have to be practical. But the point is where did that come from? Where does all your facilities, where do the concepts, where do the social structures come from? Where does, you want to maintain yourself, but that maintenance means economics. Economics means where did that come from? Right? Why is it that some people, I forget who it was. Was it the Dutch bought Manhattan? The Dutch bought Manhattan. You have these Dutch guys on the boats, they come over and they have some, European trinkets, so they're shiny. Right? So if you're living out on Manhattan, when it looks like a jungle, there's not a whole lot of things that are shiny. In a jungle, not a lot of things are shiny. Right? Even if you find a diamond, it's not shiny. Right? So then they bring along these nice shiny things and they trade, you know, trinkets and other things and buy Manhattan off the Indians. Right? So at the time of, I forget what it was worth. I don't know if it was at the time it was worth $24 what they gave, or you know nowadays it's worth $50, $50, you know. But in any case, it was a good bargain like that. So they're coming along and buying it for that. Because let me say, how did we get into that? We're trying to sell something. Oh, yeah. So how is it that these Indians that have never seen guys on boats and their funny little hats and shoes and other weirdo things that they have, understand the principle of they want this land, I'll give you this. Right? You have so-called sophisticated Western, people and so-called, local, how you say, natives, if you want to be nice, or savages, probably as the Dutch were thinking at the time. So, but how is it that the two of them could understand this principle of economics? So that means the principle is the principle established by God. It's one of the laws of nature. Right? It means you want something, you have to do something to get it. So either work is done or something, that you can, that will be equivalent to it. It's like either you worked for it or you give me something that would be equivalent to working for it. I either work for you for the week or I give you the money that's equal to a week's work. You know what I'm saying? Something has to be traded. It has to be fair. So this concept of economics, of justice, of morality, this is eternal principles. It's just part of human life. So dharma, artha, kama, moksha are established by God, not by modern man. So even your sense gratification is still established by God. Right? People look to, they want to taste something nice, smell something nice, look at things that are nice, touch things that are nice. Right? So the nicer it tastes, the better it smells. You like this, the better it looks, the more it costs. Right? If it wasn't like that, then why is it established that way? Because it's eternal principles. So that means then if you're taking up devotional service, that then, since you're trying to please God, that means the activities you perform are also trying to bring them as close to the eternal principles as possible. You're performing them connected to the Lord, so that makes it eternal. But why not work with eternal principles to get the eternal? Why work with temporary principles to get the eternal? You know what I'm saying? Why rummage through the garbage can to look for things to cook for the deities? Right? When you can go to the market and buy nice vegetables. Right? What's always been tossed out by the Vedic culture as useless, then the Westerners are taking up with great enthusiasm, saying, oh, here's something nice. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Yep. No. Okay. Yeah. We prepare our next life by our actual activities in the present life. A living entity is offered a particular type of body as a result of his action in the present body. These activities are taken into account by a superior authority. Known as Daiva, or the authority of God. This Daiva is explained in Bhagavad Gita as the prime cause of everything. And in Srimad Bhagavatam is stated that a man takes his next body as Daiva Netrena, which means by the supervision of the authority of the Supreme. So here is that daiva we're looking at. Daiva means is the results of activities. Because we're looking at it that I mechanically did something and I got the result. Right? I perform an observable activity, get an observable result. Therefore, since I did that observable, it's observable that I performed the observable activity that got the observable result. Therefore, the result is mine. And it's my credit. Right? But we're not seeing that actually all results are by daiva. They're controlled by God's laws. So you perform the activity, and depending upon whether you deserve it or not, then you'll get it. One is you have to be following the correct law to get it. But that law includes that you are, how you say? You are qualified. You know what I'm saying? Because to do an activity, you have to have a qualification. So now, if in your previous life you've done some sinful activities, that mean in this life you won't have money. Therefore, you're engaging in business and it's failing and not giving you money, you can't say, well, I'm doing everything right. Because then you're looking at just the smaller picture. You're not looking at the bigger picture. You know, it's like you're taking the thing, I took the thing, I put the stuff inside, I put the lid on, I put it on the machine. Why isn't it blending? Right? I'm even pushing the buttons. You know, and it's saying, you know, this machine's useless. What is this? No, but you haven't plugged it in. So you haven't followed the whole process. So the whole process is that you want money, you have to be pious. You weren't pious in your last life, so you weren't following the process. So how can you expect that right now it's going to work? Right? So daiva is very much part. So daiva means it's since it's the Lord's laws, you have to follow them to get the result. Right? So people follow them, that's pious. They get a good result. People don't follow them, they get a bad result. But in any case, the result is controlled by the Lord. It's not controlled by anybody else. So this idea that we'll be independent, I'll do what I want, I'll get what I want, that's not how it works. The Lord has to authorize it. So then it, like that. Does that make sense? So all results are offered by the Lord. So He is the ultimate goal. He is, there means, since all the goals that we want are controlled by the Lord, that means He's the ultimate goal. Right. And He's the controller of that, means everything is coming from Him, so therefore what you're looking for is actually Him. Right. Then it works back from there. So that's why then Krishna says anything of value, it's Him. Because you're valuing the result, you're valuing the things that you have that you can get results with. Right? You're valuing your abilities. But that's all Krishna. No? Yeah. So, yeah. So here then, go on with this. In an ordinary sense, daiva is explained as destiny. As he says, ordinary sense. Yeah. Daiva supervision gives us a body selected from 8,400,000 forms. The choice does not depend on our selection, but is awarded to us according to our destiny. If your body is present, at present is engaged in the activities of Krishna consciousness, then it is guaranteed that we will have at least a human body in our next life. A human being engaged in Krishna consciousness, even if unable to complete the course of bhakti yoga, takes birth in the higher divisions of human society so that he can automatically further his advancement in Krishna consciousness. Right? Therefore, all bona fide activities in Krishna consciousness are amrita, or permanent. This is the subject matter of the nectar devotion. Right? So bona fide activities, those are permanent. Those give a permanent result. So not bona fide activities, the first would mean is it's not connected to the Lord. Two, it would be those things that are not recommended. They're not actually for the Lord's benefit, Lord's pleasure. So then it doesn't take on the level of pure devotional service. Right? But in any case, here is that this ordinary sense, daiva, because we're just looking at it, something's happened, so we get this lifetime. We're not seeing the process that the Lord is engaged in here. Right? The Lord is we're performing the activity, that gives us a result that's arranged by the Lord. So that situation that we come into, that's daiva. Right? But it's a situation. But we don't see that it's come from previous life. Right? We're not seeing that. So we have to be very, very careful to see it. So that's the not ordinary sense. We actually see the science behind it. Then from devotional service, that then, because it's dealing with the transcendental, it guarantees minimum human life. Right? Because human life is meant for God consciousness. If you're engaged in God consciousness, naturally you'll get a human birth. Because depending on your activities, you get a birth accordingly. Right? We were discussing before is that none of these other activities can even get you a human birth. But devotional service will. It will guarantee. And then that will put you, it says, in a higher divisions of human society. So, those higher divisions, because they naturally tend towards God consciousness, or towards religious activities, towards knowledge. Right? Because it's a value for them, and it's also, they generally have more time. They have time for it. They're not just slaving away, you know, into, how you say, living in a shoebox and have a, you know, how you say, a shovel full of gravel for breakfast, and then, you know, after having gotten up before they went to bed, and, you know, like this is the EastEnders will sit around and tell how their life is worse than the other, you know, growing up and all that. So, isn't that standard, you know? Tell these wild stories at the pub and so all these things is that you won't, so the higher divisions, then they it's natural that they'll take up devotional service. So then in this we can see is that any devotional service, it will save one. It says even a little advancement will save. So we see as if someone's done agyata sukriti, it saves them. Right? Now you want to know the fun part here? Is that, therefore, because it's connected, devotional service that got you human life, right? And it's because of that that one takes birth in the higher divisions of society. So you know what the how you say, the, not reactions, the, what does it mean, that implications of this means? The implications are anyone on this planet, no matter where it is, that's born in a higher family, has performed devotional service. That's the implications. But we take it, we're just a little group of weirdos on the side. Like that. How influential and how powerful devotional service is, that we may not appreciate. The Prabhupada actually makes this point in the sixth canto. Anyone born in these, you know, your religious, noble or aristocratic families, they've all done devotional service. Right? So if they don't know about devotional service or this or that, then we can understand it was agyata sukriti. But if it isn't, so, you know, in other words, those ducks, you know, down at Regent Park, they're being born in some, you know, higher division of society, you know, like that. So all these things, so then they have the opportunity to take up devotional service again. Like that. Does that make some sense? So we can see is devotional service is much more powerful, much greater than what we consider. We always have to remember is that material life is based on illusion. And illusion means that you don't see Krishna in it. That's very simple. That which is not. We're thinking that it's just matter for us to enjoy when it's not. It's actually Krishna. It's His matter. Does that make sense? So illusion means we don't see it connected to Krishna. So because of that, then... So if you remove that, then that means there's God consciousness. So everything here in this world is meant to bring about God consciousness. So that means that whatever is going on in the world, it's actually meant to elevate you to God consciousness. So there's no such thing as, you know, there technically that there's, you know, the devotees and the non-devotees. It's just a matter of who's figured it out that they're a devotee and who hasn't. That's all. Who is seeing their activities connected to Krishna and therefore performing what a human being is supposed to do and who is not. Understand? Then we see that devotional service is the bigger picture. Everything else fits into that in some way or another. But because it's not connected to Krishna, therefore it's illusion. You know what I'm saying? If you do business for Krishna, we'll say it's devotional service, right? Won't we? Yes? No? Okay, so now that's going on like that. Now, if someone else is doing business that's not for Krishna, what will we call it?
Fruit of action.
Fruit of activities, right? But the point is what is economics for?
Economics
Is it economics there for the karmis, or is economics there for the devotees? Nanda Baba has 900,000 cows with which then he gets the milk, this and that. They sell the milk products. And in this way, he lives in a nice palace. And every year, they take, you know, so many things to Mathura to pay taxes. That's in the spiritual world. So, okay. So economics is meant for devotees. So the illusion is that you think economics is meant for yourself. That's the illusion. So it's not that, well, there's this whole economic thing going and then there's us. No. Does that make sense? If you have, you know, a million people and they all, you know, at one point in time know that 2 + 2 = 4. Okay? Now let's say that after a few years, then now out of a million people, only 100,000 people know 2 + 2 = 4, and the other don't think it's 5. Right? So is 2 + 2 now less viable? Right? Now what happens after another few years, and there's only 10,000 people that appreciate it, and everybody else thinks it's 5. Or maybe now they think it's 7, right? Because it didn't work as 5, so they got to try a different number. Right? And then a few more years go by, and there's only 10 people that know. Or one person that knows. Does that make it any less different? So, if only a few people on the planet are practicing devotional service, doesn't mean the science of Godhead is any less viable just because most people don't understand it or know it exists. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the point, is that devotional service is human life. It is what this universe is for. It is what's going on basically everywhere. If not, at least the principles on which, you know, the externals of it are even fallen in its nicer form. You know what I'm saying? Every planet in this universe follows Vedic culture. There's 14 planetary systems. 13 of them are already following the culture to more or less degrees. As you go farther down, then it gets a little bit more rough. Right? But then, and on this planet, there's 9 dweepas, right? 9? 7 islands. So 7 islands. So that means 6 of them are all God conscious. So it's only this one you have the choice. Does that make sense? So that means you're taking 1/7 of 1/14. Oh, say that again. It's 7 islands.
One of the islands is divided into 9 varshas, and only one of them is Earth.
Oh, okay. So that makes it even smaller. This is really coming to the TKG. You know that one? Prabhupada's. Yeah. At the cosmic creation, and then, you know, 1/4, and then one universe, and then this, and then there's one Tamalakrishna Goswami sitting here thinking he's the controller of everything. Right? Prabhupada had some good fun with him. No one should think badly, because when it came to controllers, I've never seen one as good as him in our movement. So, like that. So, okay, so that means 1/9 of 1/7 of 1/14. Right? Yeah, okay. So that's how much place in this universe has the option to practice, you know, Vedic culture or not. It's that small. So very, very, very small. So we have to be able to see it in the correct perspective. If we have that faith, then it makes it very easy, because otherwise, then we're not just a small, you know, ragtag, you know, bunch of people. But it's actually, we're, you know, how you say? A bunch of people, ragtag or otherwise, that have, you know, understood the process and are taking it up. So that means they're rightly situated. Like that. Rightly situated ragtags. Right? Okay. So, therefore, all bona fide activities in Krishna consciousness, Amrita, are permanent. This is the subject matter. So, therefore, what are all the activities that go on? Then, because people have a tendency towards sinful life, then they're going to go away from necessarily the recommended activities. Because devotion, since all activities are meant for devotional service, those activities that are best engaged in devotional service, those are the recommended activities. Right? So the Vedic culture, the Vedic standards, those are the activities recommended for the devotional service, because that's the culture they follow in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? Right? So activities outside of that aren't recommended. Right? Though, if they're connected to Krishna in actuality, not just in talk, then they still give an eternal result. But the activity itself is not on the eternal platform. Does that make sense? You wear a dhoti here. When you go to the spiritual world, they wear dhotis there. So that remains. But you wear pants here, you go there, they don't wear pants. Does that make sense? So, therefore, that the thing itself may be temporary, and because of our attachment to it, that's why we're dealing with it. So as that attachment becomes purified by dealing with it in connection to Krishna, there's every chance that that activity that is of substandard will be elevated to its proper standard, because we will use a higher standard. Does that make sense? We're attached to some foodstuffs that's not that elevated, but whatever it is, it works, you know. So then... with time, because it's being done for Krishna, as they become purified, then the taste rises. So we'll use better quality foodstuffs to offer to Krishna. The principle of eating remains. The principle of cooking, all that remains. What is the quality? So what is the eternal principle is the devotional activity of cooking for Krishna. That remains. Now the form remains or not. That depends upon the situation. But ultimately everything in the material world is temporary. We understand? So because of this, we're dealing with the gross, the subtle, and the spiritual all at the same time. Right? So if we only see the gross, then that's okay as long as we stick to the form of devotional service. If you can only see the gross, then you're going to be safe if you're just sticking to, you chant your rounds, you go to the temple, you do your activities, you give your money to the temple, you take your family to the temple, your family, you know, chants Hare Krishna and offers prasad and this and that and does these other things. Then you'll be safe because you're performing the activities that are meant for devotional service. Right? If you're going to talk about subtleties, then you have to be able to see those subtleties in connection to Krishna. Otherwise, then you'll be distracted. Get into all kinds of new agey things and this and that, and think that replaces the devotional activity. It doesn't. Just because it's subtle doesn't make it spiritual. Right. So the spiritual activity means spiritual. Something becomes spiritual because of its connection with the Lord. Otherwise, it's not. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Śrīla Prabhupāda ki Samaveta Bhaktavrinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandī.